Coming up on the show today, oh, the challenges of introducing technology to your congregation. We'll talk about tips and tricks, and we'll talk to two pastors who are trying to do just that with a new Bible study program that they're using technology to deliver to their members. All that and more coming up next on the Wells Tech Podcast. This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the Wells Tech Podcast. This is episode 223 for February 15th, 2012. My name is Martin Spriggs, and joining me, as usual, from Sleepy Eye, Minnesota, Sally Draper. Good morning, Sally.
Hola, Senor Spriggs.
Yes, that's about the extent of my Spanish, too.
Mine, too.
And why do you greet me in such a way?
Well, I hear you're gearing up for a trip. We're actually recording this podcast a bit earlier than normal because at this time next week you will be
It'll be in my rearview mirror at that point.
All so. Over by then.
Yes, okay. I'm looking forward, because we're recording this a week early, I'm leaving shortly to go down to Mahahual, Mexico, which is about 4 hours south of Cancun, to do a two-day workshop for Mexican national pastors, which I'm really excited about, except they don't speak English and I don't speak Spanish. So we'll see how that works. Actually, missionary Mike Hartman is going to be the translator, and I've been busily preparing all kinds of good stuff. I had a tough time this week, Sally, picking just one pick of the week, because I've uncovered some neat technology tools that help ministry. So
very good. So we'll be all set for a lot of coming episodes.
I will, yes. So
awesome. So you're not relying on Google Translate. This is Mike Hartman Translate instead.
Huh? Right. Yeah,
okay.
I think he's probably a little more reliable.
Very good. Well, we'll be anxious to hear about that.
I'll give a full field trip report.
So there you go.
I get to take
tanned and
I don't know about that.
Stuff.
Probably burned. taking Debbie along with, so we're looking forward to that a lot.
Awesome.
Anyway, we've got a show to do this week, and this is kind of similar to what I'll be doing down in Mexico with the Mexican national pastors, is talking about how to introduce technology into the congregation. And that's easier said than done, I think, Sally. There are so many different skill sets and technical savvy, you know, within our members. Some are very comfortable with technology, and others struggle with it and are afraid of it. So the question for somebody looking to use some of these technological tools that we talk about pretty freely on the show, that can be a challenge to introduce that. So we figured let's talk a little bit about some of the ways that a pastor or church leader can ease in some of these new technologies without scaring everybody to death.
Sure. I think that was kind of a common theme as we prepared for this show and talked through this topic in our pre-show preparations. Proceed with caution.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Introduce slowly.
Right.
You know, take baby steps along the way.
Right.
And do things in small settings and that kind of thing to get it started.
Yeah, I would say that's one of the keys. Start in maybe, you know, don't do the big bang approach. Start in a little bit smaller way. Look for smaller opportunities. Maybe just introduce it to smaller groups, like a Bible class or a confirmation class or a smaller service. If you've got an evening service, if you want to introduce, let's say, PowerPoints into the service or those kinds of things, it's always actually a little safer to do that as well, not just from the perception of the people but from the safety net of technology, because technology, as you and I know, Sally, doesn't always work. And if it doesn't work on the big stage, that's a bigger problem. You can get around that sometimes if it's on a little bit smaller scale and in a smaller setting where you can troubleshoot a little bit and figure out what went wrong without just having a total disaster on your hands.
Yep, I bet our Wells Tech listeners didn't know how good I am at tap dancing, because it always turns out that I get to tap dance around a technology issue or two as I'm doing presentations or whatever it may be. So I think that's great, great advice. Another good thing to do, maybe at the onset, is to form some kind of a tech committee or have a communication plan in place so that you've thought through this process a little bit more than, oh, let's just, you know, try this one Sunday or whatever. I think, Martin, you have a good resource related to tech committees in that you put together a mission and ministry book that talks about different roles on a tech committee and how that might work together.
Yeah, the construction of that, and maybe the single biggest piece of advice is don't include, you know, just all geeks on that committee. Just because they know technology doesn't mean they can marry technology to ministry. You want a mix of people. You want a representative sampling of your audience so that they can provide feedback on what might work and what might not work. And then kind of proceed in a measured approach so that it doesn't come across as, well, we're going to try this a little bit and we're going to dip our toes over here. And you really don't have any consistency or focus, or nobody can kind of see where you're going. So it's important to think through it, plan it out, phase it out, say, well, we're doing this because, so that you can set some objectives, and then measure your results, as opposed to just trying stuff and say, well, that kind of worked, but maybe we ought to try this. And you know, you really need to put a little more thinking into it than just see what sticks.
You know, I have a funny story that I thought of as you were describing that. We've been doing live video streaming in our congregation for about 3 years now. And, you know, that's a really transparent thing to the congregation. They know the camera's running because we record for the local TV, you know, replay and stuff. But the fact that it's hooked up to a computer and that there's people watching remotely and stuff. Over time, we've done little articles and things to let them know, you know, as we hear from people, what kind of effect the live streaming is having with them. But all of a sudden, we really want to pay attention to that, and we're trying to share with the congregation more of these stories. We just recently had our Unity Sunday. I talked about that last week on the podcast, and we wanted to include these live streaming folks in our Unity celebration because they have been consistently watching our services and stuff.
Neat.
So it's taken us kind of 3 years to get there,
right.
But it was really exciting to see that the congregation was really engaged in wanting to know more about the live streaming efforts.
Sure. And part of the plan, and I think part of the approach, is persistence. Just be persistent about it. Don't give up too early. It does take time for adoption to happen. And sometimes it happens in different segments of the congregation and then spreads. And to be honest, sometimes it never catches on and you just say, well, you know, that didn't work. So go on to the next thing that may work. But, you know, just keep at it. Keep at it. Like you say, you've been at it for 3 years, and now you're finally, you know, kind of putting all the pieces together. And that'll work that way in a lot of different areas of technology.
And one more tip before we get into some real examples of things you can do is that you have to educate your congregation. You need to make it really simple. You need to maybe provide step-by-step instructions if you want them to do something, lots of pictures or screenshots of what you want them to do. And you have to do it over and over again.
Right.
You know, don't just say it one Sunday or put it in one newsletter and think, well, I did it. They should know what to do. You have to reinforce that, say it over and over again, say it in different ways and different platforms, and continue to always educate.
Right. So now we wanted to talk a little bit about some of the things you can do to introduce tech. There are certain maybe low-hanging fruit that a lot of congregations will think of right off the bat, where technology can be inserted to either save money or increase communication or those kinds of things. One of them that comes to mind right away is everybody wants to do e-newsletters. So they want to get rid of the paper newsletter and go to an e-newsletter because it saves money. It's a little bit easier to get out to the people. So how do we do that? What's the best way to introduce that kind of concept, Sally?
Well, I think we've talked about several different tools on the podcast over the years. Probably MailChimp floats to the top for us as a recommended e-newsletter tool, and you can use it for free. So the price is right. It's got a great interface for administration and things. But, you know, again, you want to start slow.
Right.
In our congregation, we started by just sending out the weekly blurbs that are part of the newsletter, the little short announcements. Now, I said newsletter, I meant bulletin, that are part of the weekly church bulletin. We haven't graduated yet to doing the entire newsletter.
You're moving, you're taking your own advice. You're going
a bigger
slowly.
Undertaking. Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, start slow. People are happy to get those. We time it so that they come out on Saturday mornings. So if they want to read the bulletin early, then they have it in their e-newsletter, e-news box, and can bring it up that way. If you do go with the full-blown newsletter via email, make sure you aren't losing anything in the process.
Right.
You know, people aren't going to be happy if it ends up being a lesser product that they're getting electronically. I think probably the bigger challenge is that newsletters are bigger and have longer articles, and they aren't real conducive to just a short email. So maybe you want to have a little teaser or introduction to an article and post the article on your website instead of putting it all in your e-newsletter.
Yep. And that e-newsletter, the content there probably deserves a home on the website, if not just in the newsletter format, but also in article format, so that people are used to going to that single source for information, and that being your website. So when they go there, they're not disappointed to find, well, it's not there. What I'm looking for isn't there. If they do that a couple times in a row, three times in a week, whatever, and it's not there, it's not there, it's not there, guess what's going to happen? They're not coming back. Yeah. And then you've kind of destroyed your entire e-strategy in that way, because you really have to be consistent. So what that means is you have to have people to do that. You have to have people interested in doing that, and then you have to have plan B and plan C for if they can't do it in a particular day or week or month. So that's a challenge too, but it's in the end, it's worth it. But at the beginning, you have to really structure it so that you're not going to have these gaps and you're disappointing members by saying, well, it's not on the calendar. You know, why isn't it on the calendar? It's so easy to get on there.
Yeah, and I spoke to the fact that MailChimp is really easy to administer from your side, but a key to a strong e-newsletter is also allowing your members the ability to administer their own accounts. And that's one feature that comes with MailChimp and other similar products, so that you don't have to keep up with everyone's email address and email address changes and things like that. They have the ability to do that themselves.
Right. Along with that, you have all the social networks out there, and this kind of ties in because it is news related, and you can use social networks to get out the news. There's even new social networks, one that we talked about, that you talked about last week, Pinterest. Congregations are starting to use that to share information about what's going on or different interests that they have. So you can gather some of these news groups around what I would call affinity groups, people who are interested in the same thing. So it's women's ministry, men's ministry, whatever.
Imagine you'd mention women's ministry with Pinterest.
Yeah.
Go Pinterest for the women. Huh? But there are other social networks. Your church could certainly have a Facebook page, and I think many do these days.
Right.
You can also make use of Facebook for private groups.
Right.
We just started one in our congregation for a women's prayer group, and it's completely private, invitation only. You can't even search and find it on Facebook. Totally privatized, but allows us to share things there with a smaller group via the social network
channels. Sally, we should probably go to one of the hotter topics within our church body, at least, and that's screens in worship. Some congregations are doing it. Many more are considering it, and some, you know, don't have any interest in it or don't have a way to do it. I think maybe that's an issue for a lot of congregations with different kinds of architecture in their church that don't support that. But if you do, how do you approach it? That's a new technology, and some that's an area where you want to, again, move slowly.
Sure, and I think we've probably heard about the full gamut of different uses, everything from getting rid of the weekly church bulletin and going all electronic, everything on the screen that the worshiper needs, to just using it for showing a Wells Connection video or for some presentation after church or whatever. Certainly there's infrastructure kind of things you need to get around if you need good projection and a physical screen to put up somehow. If you need a wireless connection in your congregation so you can get to the internet for anything that you want to show on your screen, you've got to work through all those different hardware and configuration challenges. And then you've got to do the content that goes on the screen each and every
That's
week.
That's the big one, right?
And that takes a lot of work and a lot of attention, and you got to have somebody clicking the clicker that knows what they're doing and be able to have that plan B and plan C if the electricity goes off or whatever it may be.
Yeah, you can't. I don't think today even you can go totally digital or totally without the service folder because of that, because things do happen, and you obviously need to still have worship. Also, there's a lot of considerations when you're putting up a big screen like that. It can compete with what you're doing. Shane Hipps, the author of the book that we read two years ago, The Effect of Electronic Culture.
Drawing a blank.
It's right on my shelf. I could run over there.
Electronic culture is how it ends.
Yes. So. Because of that, you know, one thing that he is fond of saying is the screen always wins. So if things are competing for attention, so if the pastor's preaching a sermon and then there's a screen going, people are probably going to pay attention to the screen. So whatever you put on the screen better be worth looking at. And that can be a challenge sometimes. So where I've seen screens being done effectively in sermons is they're used sparingly. They're used for an image here or there to make a point or to hit the highlights of the particular message that is being delivered. And there are other do's and don'ts there, too. But, again, it's people think that by going with screens, it maybe is a little less work. It's actually a lot more work to do that. And then, as you mentioned, always have that plan B because things do happen. Bulbs burn out. Electricity goes off. Technology just isn't always our friend.
Sure. And Shane's book is The Hidden Power of
Electronic Culture. Right.
It's right there, yeah. So, okay, another idea for us to use technology for ministry is making our website more friendly and helping people to find all that great content we've put out there. So that comes with a good website design, good menu systems, but another thing that you can do is a screencast tour of your website so that you walk people through how to find things. And a great product for creating screencast tours is Jing. And we'll have a link in our show notes to the Jing website. It's a free download, and it allows you to record whatever is on your screen at the time. And as you move through different screens, it'll grab a video of all of that. You can narrate it and put that right, embed that right on your website.
Yep. Another product that we talked about a couple shows ago, I think, is called Screener without the last E. Does a similar thing, but it's all web-based. So I think that's we covered as many bases as I think we can cover in the allotted time here. Fortunately, we're not done with the conversation because we were able to get a couple pastors on who are actually doing some of these things, specifically introducing technology to their members in the form of daily reading or daily devotion kind of plan, where they're using things like MailChimp and blogs and those kinds of things, email, to get digital content in the form of daily readings and devotions out to a subscribers list. So we had a chance to speak with Pastor Daniel Witte from Risen Savior in Lakewood Ranch, Florida, and Pastor Emil Burgess from Trinity Lutheran in Caledonia, Wisconsin. So let's listen to them talk about how they're introducing technology to their members. Joining us today is Dan Witte from Risen Savior in Lakewood Ranch, Florida, and Emil Burgess, Trinity, Caledonia, Wisconsin. Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for joining us. The show that we're right in the midst of is a conversation about introducing technology to your members and trying to leverage it for ministry purposes. And both of you are doing something similar in that area, specifically related to Bible reading plans or devotional endeavors. But maybe before we jump into that discussion, maybe introduce yourselves a little bit. Tell us about your ministries a bit. Dan, maybe you want to start?
Sure. I'm Dan Witte. I'm a Wells pastor in Lakewood Ranch, Florida, which is the Sarasota-Bradenton area, a little bit south of Tampa, southwest part of Florida. Mm-hmm. And I've been serving here since 2001 and trying to work on a plan for our congregation this year to read through the whole Bible in chronological order, and had a number of ideas about that, and some involve technology, so I'll try to share a little bit where we've gotten so far.
Awesome. Appreciate that. You're also my brother-in-law, so in case anybody has not picked up on that from previous shows. And somebody who's not related, Emil, tell us a little bit about yourself. At least I don't think we are.
Yeah, probably not. Yeah. I serve at Trinity in Caledonia, and it's about, not too many miles south of Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. I just passed the airport. And I was assigned here about 4 years ago. And the congregation called me to help them focus their efforts on outreach and to maybe bring a little bit of added technology to the ministry as well. So in addition to just the other pastor-type stuff, preaching and teaching and counseling and visitation. So, yeah.
Very good.
And Emil has some Wells Tech ties, too. Not a blood tie, but we do play his music or the music of his band on a regular basis. He's part of Corbin Creek, one of our featured artists.
Very nice.
Right. Yeah, formerly part of Corbin Creek. We haven't been together for quite some time now, but yeah, that was a fun time during college and seminary to play a little music and assist some congregations.
Nice. We appreciate you letting us play that music. Good stuff. So you both have started a Bible reading plan. Tell us a little bit about what was behind that when you were thinking about doing this as the new year came along. What went through your mind is, you know, why was that something that you wanted to spend some time doing? Either one of you can jump in. You don't have to raise your hand.
I guess.
Go ahead, Emil.
Okay. The new year is a great time to start something like that, just because everybody has, whether they say it or not, everybody sort of has their own internal resolutions that they want to be better and improve at certain things. And it's, I don't know, it's my experience. Christians, you know, despite how much they might read their Bibles or not, want to, or at least they seem like they want to, but there's just a number of, you know, hindrances and hesitations there. So it's something that we've wanted to do for a long time and have done on an informal basis many times, just sort of, you know, we'd distribute a Bible reading plan or we'd make them available, but not sort of have a campaign where the congregation is formally following this and trying to get as many people to follow as possible. Right. So this year it happened that we floated the idea by our church council. We wanted just to have them focus on personal Bible reading. And then when they agreed and they thought it was a cool idea and that every month at our meetings we would sort of review the chapters we had read and maybe pick out a few verses to study more in depth, when they thought it was good, then we decided, well, why don't we just open it up to the congregation? And we were already using MailChimp as our congregational email website. So it was pretty easy just to start a new campaign on MailChimp and cut and paste the readings and mm-hmm. add some audio. So that's kind of how it happened here at Trinity.
Okay, we'll get into the tech here in a minute. We'll do a deep dive there to see exactly how you did it. So if some are interested in doing the same thing, maybe they can follow the leader. Dan, how about you? What got you started?
A couple things similar to Emil. Had a man who's no longer in our church council, but a man who had told me months and months ago, Pastor, a year of the Bible, why don't we have 2012 be our year of the Bible? It struck me, not that history dictates for us, but it was 500 years ago that Martin Luther became a professor of the Bible and doctor of theology in a university in a little town called Wittenberg. And it changed the world. Certainly made a difference to me. So that's been a little bit of how I've sold it to the congregation. Not in a big way, but hey, let's make 2012 the year of the Bible among us. I haven't myself personally read through the Bible in chronological order for some years or from Genesis to Revelation in some years. I've had some different plans, and I thought even for myself, it's time to do that again. And I had found a book that I thought I could use as a basis for the schedule, and I thought there might be some ways to use technology too. So we've been using it on Sunday mornings as well, a sermon series that relates somewhat, knowing that in our congregation, midweek and Sunday Bible class are important to some, but not nearly to as many as a person would like. Maybe maybe a technology and book-related campaign can help with people's various schedules and get people into the Bible in other ways that they might not have. Those are the main reasons.
Seems like technology, book-related technology, has really taken off with all the interest in e-books and that kind of thing. So maybe this was a great time to get started. Emil mentioned that they're using MailChimp. Are you doing an email campaign as well, Dan?
We are. We're using MailChimp, and it's getting emailed to people. It's starting out in WordPress as a WordPress blog. MailChimp picks up the feed for the day 5 days a week and emails it to 60 people, most of them in our congregation, a few others.
So that's a little bit more complicated than just using MailChimp and developing it there. Are you using a blog setup as well, Emil?
We had explored that option, and in fact, our spiritual growth chairman, that's kind of how we got the idea of Facebook. Our spiritual growth chairman had said, well, can we get some discussion going on some of these readings? You know, can we start a blog and get some of our members dialoguing about it? So just exploring that option, you know, after the MailChimp thing was already going, it was kind of tough. There was a lot of hoops, at least for me, to jump through. So it was real easy for us just to instead click the little easy checkboxes in MailChimp that says auto tweet and auto Facebook post. So yeah, the blog thing is something we'd like to explore, but I don't know enough about, you know, I have to confess, I don't know a lot about blogs. I know that some of our members would have to have an account and log in to participate potentially. So it was something we sort of are trying to, we're trying to get that conversation started on Facebook.
Okay. That's interesting. There's a couple different approaches going. You're using social networks, Emil, Facebook and Twitter, to kind of encourage dialogue. And Dan, you're using the blog itself. Are you encouraging people to come to the blogs and have a conversation, Dan, or is it more individual than that?
Yeah, it's more individual than that. I've mentioned it to a few people. I put it in print. I don't know how many people in our congregation, like Emil, are so up on how they're going to log in or even follow via a reader. I've mentioned it to people. This is going to be an RSS feed. I can explain more if you want. I might know a little bit more than Emil, but I don't know much. So we haven't had feedback per se. We do have a church Facebook page, and that's something I haven't thought of, and I'm glad you mentioned it, about the possibility of automatically through MailChimp connecting this with our church's Facebook page and encouraging some dialogue and feedback that way.
When you guys were looking at the technologies, I know, Dan, you and I talked about a couple things. Did you just consider regular old email, and what made you go this route?
I'll say that talking with you, I was thinking of some place where I could work in advance, where I could have something pre-scheduled. I thought you had a pretty good idea with WordPress, and I'd bought a dummy's WordPress book some time ago and hadn't studied it much. And I thought, well, how, this can't be that hard. There has been some trial and error, and I'll be happy to explain about that. I'll let Emil take a shot at this one, maybe two first, but you certainly learn by saying, well, other people have figured this out. There's gotta be a way. I don't want to spend a lot of ministry time in this, but maybe if I can figure it out, I can save myself ministry time later by getting something that's fairly automated, which is, I'd say, where I am at this point, having done it for about a month.
So how far do you try and stay ahead?
A week. Right now I'm about a week and a half out, but no more than that.
And you do that by posting the blog post and then dating its release, right?
Right. So WordPress has a nice, simple dashboard. At least I found it easy to work with. I like it as a newbie to WordPress, where I can post something and say, now you're going to publish this on this day at this time. Mm-hmm. And if I found a mistake, a typo, something I need to correct, that it's easy to go back as long as it hasn't gone out already. Finally, you can pull it back even if it has gone out.
Sure.
MailChimp is going to pick it up some hours later, is the way I've got it set up. But I find those two to work well together.
And Emil, do you kind of do the same thing, or are you doing it every day?
I try to do about the same thing, maybe work about 3-4 days in advance or a week. MailChimp's got the same thing with scheduling, and that's what's ideal. Originally, you know, maybe it was about a year ago, we wanted to send out congregational emails and improve our internal communication. And I think I got, you know, it was Wells Tech Podcasts where I got the idea to use MailChimp. Because it's free and uses HTML and looks real slick. Mm-hmm. It was really the Wells emails. You know, ever since the Wells website got revamped and the emails got revamped, I've always been impressed by how slick they look. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what I was following the lead from those.
Sure. And we use a similar approach with the blog. We use Drupal kind of a blog module, and then MailChimp to pull that in, similar to what Dan does. So,
cool. What about your congregation's reactions? Are people signing up in droves? Are you getting discussion around it? How's it going? And have you hit any snags along the way?
Well, It's a couple good questions. I'll start with the first. I'd say signing up in droves, I didn't give anybody the option. I signed up everybody with an email address in a congregation and told them repeatedly. And I liked, again, how Martin explained this to me. That's been one of the big sellers for me on the MailChimp solution, is that people could unsubscribe. That in the past, when I've done some things by email, you kind of wonder whether you're bothering people or whether they're just deleting. I think that's a very healthy thing, that I could say to people, this is one way you can read through the Bible this year. If you've got a better plan, great. Don't worry about it. Don't feel bad. I sent out an email about a week after we started the campaign specifically saying it's okay to unsubscribe. And I wrote that in the worship folder a couple times in the announcements and made sure I said it out loud a few times. So we've had... Again, I have about 60 subscribers right now. I think we probably had about 10 people unsubscribe. I just looked at the stats again. MailChimp, pretty helpful with the dashboard it has. You can see we don't have even half. We don't even quite have a quarter of them being opened. I'd say we have more than 3/4 of what I'm sending out being unopened. Hmm. But I didn't expect this to be something that would take over the congregation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I'll tell you about some snags, too, but maybe the happiest anecdote is you start plugging this in December. You tell people, here's what we're going to do. Our congregation's a little smaller, and I probably should have done a little bit more work with elders and congregation leaders, although that's been a big-time flux situation for us lately. We've just gotten some new leaders on board, so it was a little bit more the pastor saying, this is what we're going to do, than saying, hey, guys, would you like to do this? What do you think? And this is anecdotal, but there was a particular man in our congregation who was more interested than anybody else. Thanks, Pastor. This is great. I'm really looking forward to 2012 being the year of the Bible. He's told me several times recently it's been an everyday thing for him. Would it surprise you that he is going to be our new president of the congregation, that there's a connection between Bible reading and his interest in serving the Lord? I hope it wouldn't surprise you.
I think that's a neat little thing that happened. I think I've read that somewhere in the Bible, in fact, that the word can have that effect.
Very good.
How about you, Emil?
I'll talk about some snags, too, but let me give Emil a shout at this, too.
Yeah, I think we've had some similar experiences, too. The best thing is that anecdotal, feedback that you get from people just saying, this has been great for me to have it, you know, pop into my inbox at 5 a.m. and have it there, and I can click listen, and we've got an audio link on ours, and people have said, yeah, I just stick my iPad on the sink, and I can do my makeup there or whatever, and listen to the chapter for the day, and so that's really been the best feedback. I think for us, we have some similar statistics as far as how many people are opening the emails and how many people are unsubscribing relatively. We have 900 souls in the congregation and about 330 receiving the emails, and about a quarter of them are opened. And so, you know, who knows? I'm just glad we have that many that are opening them and making use of them. The glitch for us, or the one hang up, has been the unsubscribe, because we already have a list of all the people, and they receive a weekly email from the congregation just on, and that's just a, you know, we call it our Sunday sneak peek. It's a document that sort of gives them all the readings for Sunday and some questions to study if they want, and a couple of the hymns. So they receive that on Thursday mornings and congregational prayer requests and announcements. And so we already had that list set up. And so I had to create a group in MailChimp. But the problem is, if you unsubscribe to that group, you're still unsubscribing to the entire
everything,
list.
Right.
So I have a little workaround for that, but it's kind of, you know, it's not perfect.
That was tricky for us, too, and it's a little deceiving. When you get the email, at the bottom it says unsubscribe, and it also says manage my subscriptions.
Right.
And if you click on the unsubscribe, that does the whole thing. The way for people to actually just unsubscribe from one of them is to manage subscriptions, where they've got, you know, checkboxes say, send me this, but don't send me this. So it's right. I think that's – and I don't know if you can change that either. But that, I think, is a problem with how MailChimp is managing the unsubscribe options.
So what kind of workaround did you come up with, Emil?
Go ahead, Dan.
Go ahead. Dan. No, let Emil finish.
The workaround that I have is not very elegant, or, you know, I created a link that's just an email link that says unsubscribe to the Bible reading plan. And that just sends an email to me that is already pre-written email that says, please unsubscribe me. I already have my own spiritual growth plan for 2012. Thank you. And so I've gotten a few of those, but then I've gotten a few others that are unsubscribed, you know, from the entire list. And so sometimes I'll call them up and just double check. Are you just unsubscribing to the emails or to the Bible reading plan or the whole list? And every time it's just been that they've wanted to unsubscribe from the daily chapter.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not elegant, but it serves our purposes right now.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
Dan, how about you then?
As far as some snags here, I'll say that I've learned a number of things on the technology side about what I can link to easily and what people can do on various devices.
Right.
I wanted to learn about, I wanted to make sure that I was okay copyright wise. So I mentioned a book before. This all starts with me finding a book in a used bookstore. It's now an out of print book. So I was able in December to eliminate one snag. I contacted the permissions department of that publisher and said, hey, I'd like to use this book of yours, and I have written permission from them to use their schedule. they said for missionary purposes, and they wanted me to make sure I showed permission, et cetera, if I would do anything with it in a print form. So that was one thing I learned about. I've learned that when timing is important, that MailChimp works on Greenland time. if you think you're sending it out at one time, you're sending it out at another time. So I've learned what that means. I'm on Eastern time.
So you got if I wanted to go out at 5 a.m. 4 or 5 hour issue, right?
For Greenland time, I've one of my snags, and I'm not sure how it happened. I got kind of frustrated, but it's worked itself out now. I would tell WordPress, okay, get this early in the morning, and then MailChimp, you go get it a little later, but still early in the morning. And I found that multiple times in one week it didn't work, and then it was twice the next day. And so my simple plan on that is that WordPress is publishing Sunday through Thursday. We have a 5-day-a-week program to go through the whole Bible, and MailChimp is going to get it early Monday through early Friday morning. And for some reason, that's working better for us. Mm-hmm. One of those little funny things.
So if you ever visit Dan's church, there's a lot of clocks around. You'll understand why.
Exactly.
Good stuff. Do you see technology helping you in your ministry in other ways? Are there tools that you'd like to recommend to our Wells Tech listeners in other avenues of your ministry?
Well, I'll specifically speak, first of all, about the Bible reading. I knew that besides some people are using a Bible that they're reading that's arranged in chronological order. Some people, in a simple way, here's technology. Let's make a bookmark. Can I hand you a free bookmark this Sunday morning with our Bible reading schedule? That's pretty old technology, a computer and a laser printer and a paper cutter. But I myself am doing it mostly listening, like Emil said. And I'm using YouVersion a lot for my listening, which is the same reading as on BibleGateway.com for the NIV. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I found out that iOS people who are tied to an iPad or an iPhone aren't going to be able to use, I believe it's the Bible Gateway. I'm going to look again at my...
I think so, because it's Flash-based.
Right, it's Flash. So then, at the bottom of every email that goes out, at the bottom of every WordPress blog that's posted, I got a little note that says iOS listeners can't listen to Bible Gateway. They may want to listen to the YouVersion app, and I have the same little link every day, but trying to make sure that no matter who in our congregation, I suspect my Android phone that I've just started using and other people with their iPhones, those are probably the dominant platforms. But you got to think about different browsers, what if they have a Mac? What if they have this kind of computer? So that's been a little bit of a trick, but a good thing too, when you've got the copyrighted content that's already online, just to link to it. I don't print anything out. I've learned a little bit of HTML in order to make the WordPress blog look okay and let people click on things. So,
Emil, how about yourself? Other uses of technology in your ministry?
We use Shepherd Staff church management software here, mm-hmm. and we've been using it for about 3 years and still working out the kinks with Shepherd Staff. It's... You know, back 3 years ago, maybe it was what you would get the most bang for your buck for in management software, and I'm not sure if I agree with that anymore. Uh-huh. Now that other stuff has come out, but we're kind of staying with it since we're using it in every module now,
right?
In attendance and membership and contributions and finance. So
okay.
So we're just getting used to, we're still having growing pains with Shepherd Staff.
Good news on that front. I talked with the folks at Concordia last week, I guess it was, and there's a new version coming out in 2012 and another one in 2013, plus a product called Church 360, which is a totally online version that'll be based on a subscription. So new things coming out of Concordia. Yeah. So I think just hang on tight. Mm-hmm. Guys, we're about out of time. Really appreciate you taking, both of you taking the time to share with us some of your plans. And boy, we will pray with you, I'm sure, that this is successful and you have more and more people in the Word. And I think it's great that you're trying to leverage technology and encourage your members to get in the Word that way. Thank you for taking the time today, guys.
Yeah. You're welcome.
No problem. Thank you.
Okay. Our thanks to Emil and to Dan for taking some time with us. That's good stuff where I think there's value in making this effort. And you know, they have a long haul ahead of them because they've got to keep up with this. But it seems like there is appreciation and certainly value in getting God's Word into their members' hands on a regular basis.
It was really cool that they both started parallel programs and that we can kind of look behind the curtain of both of them, doing it different ways, but having really great results. And mm-hmm. both men were willing to share with us links to their Bible right. reading e-newsletters. So if you're interested in following along, you can certainly subscribe with the links we'll provide in the show notes.
Yeah, they both do a nice job. Thank you, guys. Shall we move on to our picks of the week, Sally?
You bet. It's one of my favorite picks. An annual pick of mine is the Doodle for Google contest. Mm-hmm. This is a contest opened up for kindergartner through high school age students where they can submit their efforts at a doodle to play on the Google homepage. Mm-hmm. You guys are familiar with these special doodles that they do throughout the year for different occasions. And each year they dedicate one day to a student's doodle. And that student actually wins this enormous $30,000 college scholarship, as well as a $50,000 technology grant for their school. So wouldn't it be great if one of our Wells schools mm-hmm. won a $50,000 technology grant? That would be awesome.
Yeah.
This year's theme is, if I could travel in time, I'd visit. So they're to do a drawing incorporating the Google lettering in the drawing of any place and time. And I think there's lots of potential there for a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. I've got some video links to get the kids excited about the contest and some information about last year's contest, which was what I'd like to do someday. Mm-hmm. And we'll include links to all of that in the show notes.
Yeah, that's neat. My wife said they were doing that in their art class yesterday it was.
Cool.
Google Doodle. So at least one of them wants to submit it. So very nice. Mm-hmm. My pick of the week is a texting app called GroupMe. There are a number of these. WhatsApp is probably the most popular, but I think GroupMe is a little bit simpler to use. It is probably the most useful for smaller groups. So I can envision a youth group leader getting his or her youth group into GroupMe, and it works very simply. You create a group of friends via their telephone numbers. You enter them, and it can pull from your address book or whatever once you install the app. So it can pull all your friends, and then you put them in little groups. So you could have a youth group. You could have a family group. You could have a congregation group if you wanted to do that. You could have friends group. Knitting group, whatever.
And knit, huh?
No, but I can imagine that could be useful.
You
so you have the ability then to send with one text message that same message to the entire group. But it's even more than that because once they get the message, they can reply and it goes back to the entire group as well. So it acts like a chat tool or a group messaging so that you can have a conversation, not just one-to-one, but many-to-many or one-to-many. And the tool is free. A couple neat things is you can hook it up to your Twitter and Facebook accounts, and you can send what they call or ask a question. So, for instance, I just asked a question this morning because we're doing this seven best teacher resources list in a couple of weeks. I said, I used my GroupMe app and I said, teachers, what is your favorite education resources website? Top seven list will appear on upcoming Wells Tech podcast. Let me know on GroupMe. So what they can do is click on the link in my Facebook post or Twitter post and respond, and they'll go to GroupMe, and that will go to the go to me, but I can have an ongoing conversation with anybody else who replies. So this is good for coordinating activities, asking questions, all kinds of things where you want kind of quick real-time communication. And right on your phone, which a lot of people prefer to use that for communication. So I've got good, real good feedback from using this, and I think there's potential for ministry for this little tool called GroupMe. It was a product that was standalone. Now it's bought by Skype, but it still maintains its identity totally free. And works either with SMS, so it'll use the text messaging interface, or if the other people have GroupMe as well, it'll use their own network, so you don't actually use text messaging. It will not count against your text messaging limits if you have that. So pretty cool tool, GroupMe.com.
Yeah, I think texting and in-your-pocket communication is definitely the future. More and more people are moving away from the traditional computer and email communication, and that's a great way to take advantage of that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, all right.
Let's move on.
Oh, yeah, you mentioned our seven best. Right. We want to just put a plug in that we are waiting anxiously to hear from all our listeners about what their favorite teacher resource sites are. So whatever websites you use for education, and maybe it's for catechism education if you're a pastor or whatever it is, we'd like to include your picks in our seven best lists. So reach out to us via Twitter or Facebook or Google+ or Pinterest, or just send us a plain old email. And we will be listening with open ears and putting together that list. It'll appear on our March 7th podcast coming up very soon. So
very
be part of that.
Good. Yep. Looking forward to that. Mm-hmm. Shall we move on to community feedback?
You bet. We heard from several people this week, including Nathan Block, who is the outreach coordinator at New Hope in Melbourne, Florida. And he sent us a link to Khan Academy. Khan Academy is an awesome website with thousands of videos that probably started about middle school level and go up in math and science topics, all different kinds of things there. I read a little bit about Salman Khan. He started doing these videos for his nephews who were mm-hmm. in another location, and he wanted to explain some of the math concepts they were struggling with. And from there, it took off. Other people started watching him and commenting on them. And the video library is just unparalleled. It really is exceptional.
Right.
But there's a whole nother side to Khan Academy, and that is that you can now create accounts and practice with their practice exercises that are connected with many of the math videos in particular. So you can earn badges and earn points, and teachers can be the coaches of their students and see all the analytics, what they've been studying, how much time they've spent watching videos versus doing the practice exercises and things like that. So if you haven't dug in yet, and Nate, I don't think you even mentioned that in your email to us. If you haven't dug into the practice side of Khan Academy, you need to check that out mm-hmm. as well.
Yeah,
it's
that
an
is,
awesome site.
It's cool. Yeah, I've seen it in action.
All right. Next up, Pastor Clint Rogus wrote in, hoping that we will soon do some Android tablet development of the Wells Online app. The Wells Online, the app was on our seven best digital Bible study tools mm-hmm. with our Bible readings and daily devotions that are available through that app. And it works great on iOS. And it works on Android smartphone devices, but there is yet to be developed a tablet device. So maybe you can bring us up to speed on where that stands, Martin.
TBD.
There you go. Official word.
Yeah, we use a tool to develop it, and I'm kind of at the mercy of the tool's developer to port that over to Honeycomb, or now Ice Cream Sandwich, as they call it, devices, which is what would run on on tablets. So unfortunately, no love for you yet if you are an Android tablet user. So use your phone or an iOS device at this point. You can always get a lot of this via just regular old RSS, which obviously you can get on an Android tablet. So you're kind of stuck, you know, with that. But we are working on it. We recognize that there is a request for it or a number of requests for it. So hopefully early this year yet.
So, yeah, I'm thinking even with the browser, you could browse to the Wells.net site and find a lot of this.
It's just not quite as
well.
Convenient. So.
Right. We want to get it packaged up for you, and mm-hmm. we're anxious to do that. So
yep.
We'll let you know when it happens, Clint.
And we are, just on that same topic, we are trying to make available both the Synod Yearbook, so that you can look up pastors, teachers, staff ministers, and congregations, as you could in a regular paper yearbook, but in your on your smartphone or your tablet. Also the church locator. So if you're on the road and you want to find the nearest Wells Church, you could do that right on your smartphone.
Yay. I'll be anxious to hear the announcement about those as well. So
that's also
very
TBD.
Good. Yeah. keep them guessing.
That's
huh?
right. All I'm right. guessing, so.
Pastor Jeff Cragen wrote on our Facebook page, I believe, or maybe it was on Google Plus, that he's been enjoying the podcast and just recently subscribed, but he has a comment on one of the picks, Card Cloud, Martin, which was one of your picks. He says when he went to get the iPhone version for his iPad, most of the reviews were negative and said that it caused crashing. Hmm. Maybe there were bugs there. Have you had any issues with the application, Martin?
I have not, but I don't have it on an iPhone. I have it on an Android device, so I cannot vouch for that side of the house. I have not had any issues with it on the Android side, so maybe it's iPhone specific. Sorry about that. We should put a disclaimer on all of our picks, Sally, that don't blame us if they don't
not
work
scientific.
For you. Right. That's why
your
we have
mileage
a,
may vary.
That's right. That's why we have a three best and three worst picks of the year every at the end of every year.
Sure. All right, a few links from Randy Nepson on Digo. We have a great Wells Tech Digo group.
We
if
do.
You're not a part of it, we'd love to have you join. It's a wonderful way to share links and things. And Randy shared this week a PDF online converter so that you could potentially read those Microsoft Publisher files. If you don't have Microsoft Publisher installed, here's one way to get around that. You could upload a Publisher file to this site and convert it to PDF. And so you would be able to read it. Obviously, if it's PDF, you wouldn't be able to edit the Publisher file, but at least you'd be able to read what was in a Publisher file if one gets sent to you and you're kind of stuck, unable to read it. Mm-hmm. So that's a great workaround.
That's kind of a happy thing, I guess how I would describe it, in the technology world today, that there are very few formats that get sent to you or that come through your attachments on your email inbox that you can't convert somehow. Mm-hmm. There's always some kind of tool out there like this where you can get around it. So that's good news.
Definitely. And one more link from Randy was to technologyintegrationandeducation.com. And it looks like a great resource site. Maybe we need to put this one on our seven best list. Who knows? Mm-hmm. I'll have to dig a little deeper and see what all is here. But they have groups and things that you can be a part of, everything from directors of technology to Glogster in education and Free for Education and Adobe in education and early childhood teachers, just lots and lots of different slices of a group community here. And looks to be abundant with mm-hmm. lots of resources for teachers interested in technology and education. So check it out.
Great. Thanks for sharing, Randy. We appreciate that very much.
And then finally, if you are interested at all in library software, perhaps school wants to digitize the library, checking in and checking out management of books, our friend Gail Potratz asked a question over on the Wells Tech listserv, and she got a ton of responses. So it was really neat. We'll try to make a list of links to different library software that was mentioned on the listserv in our show notes so mm-hmm. that you can get a feel for that if you're looking at all for that kind of solution.
Yep, very good. That's going to about do it for the show. Maybe we should let our folks know what's going to happen next week. I'm excited about a show on cyberbullying because I was just up in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin at Faith Lutheran doing an internet safety presentation. And it just so happens we'll talk a little bit about that. But we also had the privilege of talking with Dr. Justin Patchen from cyberbullying.us. He's an associate professor up at Wisconsin, University of Wisconsin, Eau Claire. And we had a great conversation with him about the things that schools can do, parents can do to both recognize when cyberbullying is going on and what to do about it. So that's going to be the show next week. So tune in then to learn all about that and a very interesting topic.
Definitely. We appreciate Justin for joining us, and I think everyone will enjoy his
very smart,
his contribution.
Smart guy, prolific in what he's written, too, about it. I mean, he really seems to be an expert on it. So tune in next week for that. Let's close the show, Sally, with the music of Dawn Michelle Williams from her album Inspirations, the very familiar Beautiful Savior with Canon in D. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
Adios.